Blog Talk Radio.
We do something a little different tonight. Wait for a couple of people to call. As soon as they call, we'll turn the song off and come on. But this one's called Forever Angel, and it's by Axel Rudy Pell.
Oh,
Frank.
Hey, what's going on there?
Not much, man. We dig that song.
I like it. Who's that by?
Axel Rudi Pelder out of Germany.
Oh, really? Sounded like kind of like a Journey song or something like that, something from the 80s.
No, those guys are pretty big over there. But
yeah.
That was a tribute song to, well, you know who.
Yeah, that's a good song, though. I was listening to it. It got some good guitar work, and I like the chorus.
Yeah.
Catchy.
They're pretty good. But, hey, I was going to... I found something yesterday, and a lot of people liked when I put it up. But it's called Some Gave All, and it's basically it's about Marines.
Okay.
And a lot of these guys, they're like forgotten right off the bat. You know, if it's a bar fight with two bikers, that's on the 11 o'clock news. And nobody gives a shit about this stuff, you know?
Yeah,
You know, unless, and God forbid, but unless it's like 7 or 8 guys, you don't hear about one guy or this guy, you know? Like where I live, I'm right outside Camp Pendleton, so the town newspaper, it usually depends, page 1 or page 2.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, you don't hear about it. You know what I'm talking about. If it's... Like I said, if it's a bar fight with two bikers, that's on the 11 o'clock news.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No, and then the rest of it gets buried into the newscast between commercials or just before the weather.
Yeah.
That tells you how important I think it is.
It's funny because, I've heard some stories from you guys and some from, like Massachusetts and other places and stuff, and to me and stuff, I never really noticed what was going on because around here, the biker stuff's kind of like in the way of life because we live so close to Lake George. We just had Americade. That's where all the bikers in the whole country come and, party for the whole weekend. And, I never noticed anything. I never kind of got into the stuff that you guys talk about and, definitely has opened between the Biker Lowdown show and this show, has opened my eyes to more things that, I mean, I don't notice it in my local area, but I guess it's going around, different states and stuff.
Yeah, it's called selective enforcement.
Yeah.
Anytime you go to a big event like that, it's like going to Vegas. You're going to make your deposit and leave and go home broke.
Yeah. Yeah.
Between the high prices and the cops, you're going to go broke.
Well, I mean, they were they had routine checking only for bikes, not for cars. They let all the cars
through.
Yeah,
and that's illegal.
Is it really?
Yeah. We out here in California, they get what they call motorcycle safety checkpoints. But
yeah,
they were getting grand money that got taken away from them.
Or what?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was gonna say they call it like a routine check.
Yeah.
It's
not a routine check. It's It's open your checkbook and give me a check.
Yeah. The government.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean,
go ahead.
I was gonna say there was a couple pulled over, maybe like 3 bikes, and they were looking through backpacks and different things and.
You know what I do when I get stopped, Frank? Here's what I do. I don't make any sudden moves. I don't put my kickstand down. I turn the bike off. Put my hands up. That's where I'm going. I'm going to point B. Where are you coming from? Point A.
Yep.
Oh, you're not going to answer any questions? No, I refuse to give up those rights. What are you hiding in your saddlebags? Nothing. I refuse to give up those rights. And if they start getting testy and they we're going to arrest you and shit. Okay, fine. I want a supervisor now.
Yeah, they can't do that,
No, everything's supposed to stop, but what they do is after I get handcuffed for my own safety.
Oh, yeah. Well, sometimes, it's good because sometimes there are, you know, because it's Americade, there's a lot of people driving drunk and everything. And, I mean, that's good if they catch some of those guys. But I don't see – to me, I think they were checking license plates, but I don't really know too much about it, you know.
Yeah, well, they figured and I'd say a good 70 to 80% of those that they stop are from out of state.
Oh, yeah.
So they know they'll just – they know they'll just pay the ticket.
Yeah.
Because
we're pretty good around
DMV
here with the local guys, though, for some reason, you know.
Yeah. Every DMV is all connected now, so if you get a ticket and you don't pay it there, you're going to – your DMV is going to jump on the bandwagon for handling it, and you're going to pay double the fees and all that bullshit.
Yeah.
That's why 9 out of 10 people just pay the ticket and forget about it.
Yeah. Yep.
But I'm gonna play one of your songs, and then we'll come back and do your bio. We'll talk a little bit about your bio, okay?
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate you having me being the co-host tonight. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's just Bill's mom's still sick, and His Tuesdays are tied up for a while, so I'm gonna be just asking people who wants to help me co-host, and then we'll go from there. But I'm gonna play It's All Right. This one's from by Frank Palangi, and this is on his EP. And I put up in the chat where you guys can check Frank out at he's on Facebook at Frank Palangi, solo artist. How about if you tell them where you're at, Frank, and I'll play the song.
Yeah, I'm at Facebook, MySpace, myspace.com/FrankPalangiRocks, Twitter. I mean, if you Google my name or, you know, anything you use, Twitter, MySpace, YouTube, if you type in Frank Palangi, you'll be able to hook up with me and find out everything you want to. And I got a lot of stuff going on now, and keep busy during the day. A lot of it's busy computer work, but there's a lot of other stuff, too.
All right, this one's called It's All Right by Frank Palangi.
Knowing the true meaning in life.
was Frank Belangi, and the song was called "It's All Right." So, Frank, when you do your music, how do you start it out? I know there's no plan B, so what's your plan A?
What's my plan A? The music industry, getting as far as I can to that next step, sort of. I just had an article came out on me, and the title was "The Goal I Strive For Is Growth." Because one of the questions she asked me was like, what's kind of like your ultimate goal? You know, what's going on? And I'm like, well, I want to say, I want to get a record deal and all that, but most important thing is you're growing. And the goal really is to grow, is to, where were you 2 years ago? Where were you now? You know, did you stay stagnant, or did you grow, leaps and bounds with things? So I kind of look at it that way, and I think that's the only way you can look at something and view your progress.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what does it for me, pretty much. I mean, I've been working hard, and I got a lot of things going on, and, it isn't easy trying to break into a mainstream market with something, and, I'm lucky that, I've been down to Nashville and got to work with some good people and have that end to it, because if I didn't, it would be even harder, because it's tough trying to do recording even by yourself, even what I did before. Mm-hmm.
Have you hooked up with Charlie yet?
I just actually became friends with him today on Facebook, so I'm going to see what he's up to probably next couple days.
He's getting ready to do his East Coast gig thing. I think he's leaving Saturday. Yeah, he's leaving Saturday morning.
Yeah, it'll probably get hard to get a hold of, but I'll get a hold of him.
No, if you call him, he'll answer the phone.
Oh, yeah?
Uh-huh. No, he's not like that. If you call him within 10 minutes, if you don't get him within 10 minutes, he'll call you back.
Oh, okay. Cool.
And then I got somebody online, Tiger Lily.
Hi, let me take you off his speakerphone.
Sure.
How are you?
Good. Tiger Lily,
how
this
you
is
doing?
Frank Belangi. He's a musician out of New York, and he's my co-host tonight.
What's his name?
How you doing?
Hi. What's the
Frank
name?
Is Frank Belangi.
Frank Belangi, Italian, huh?
Oh yeah, yep.
I love Italians from New York. That was my first boyfriend. He's the one that got away.
Oh geez.
So you're into music, huh?
Oh yeah, yeah. I got an EP coming out that I recorded in Nashville, and like I was telling Philip over there, it's tough trying to break into the mainstream market of stuff, and it's a lot of work too at the same time.
How does the rotten economy factor into the breaking in? I mean, on the one hand, it seems that people would have more time on their hands to want to be entertained with something like music, but on the other hand, any industry, they're all hurting, it seems like. Even news stations seem to be closing down, mainstream news stations cutting back and getting rid of reporters, and it just, how is the economy impacting the music industry, do you think?
For indie artists, there's a lot of opportunities on the internet. There's stuff where you can submit the things like Sonic Bids and other stuff. It only costs you, say it was like $50 a year or something like that. And then, $5 here, $10 here are free to enter certain things. What I noticed is people are choosing the right shows to go to. If they go see, Motley Crue, the tickets are now $50 a piece rather than $35. So they'll go see that, and that'll be their big event for the summer. And I notice a lot of times they don't really go out and visit their favorite indie band show. Or I've had it done to me, like some of my friends and stuff. They're like, we're gonna go see Poison, but we don't have the money to pay $10 or $15 to get into your show. So I usually have to sneak them in for free somehow.
Oh my god!
But it's tough because on my budget scale, with money, you can do a lot more. I could submit to so many different things. I could have, you know, 10 radio campaigns going on and this and that. But the reality is, you know, if you don't have that money, you have to get in contact with these people and have them believe in your music and play at least a little bit somehow. But
right. Well, it seems like you've got the passion behind it, and I think that's the one of the main barriers or the things that might propel people to succeed is you have to have a passion for what you do. And was that last piece your music?
Yeah,
yes.
That was my It's All Right. Yep.
Yeah, that was cool. I like that. Do you also compose?
He does all his own stuff. He plays all his own instruments and everything.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I write all the lyrics and write all the music. And what was cool is, you know, I usually do, because I have a home studio, so I'll do a home studio demo. And what was cool is to see that transform into the, you know, the professional sort of EP version with the rock band, you know, Day of Fire playing it. It's like bringing it up to another level and to hand off your material and have them put their own spin on it, but they're playing almost exactly what you wrote. It's
right. What would you charge, for example? You know, I don't know if you know. Does Phil? Does he know David Stillwell and Gorilla Lawfare and all of that?
No. Well, we were going to get to that, but don't spoil it.
Well, let me. Okay, I won't. Basically. Gorilla Lawfare is an activist organization, and we were talking. Dave and I were talking about how it would be cool to have when we do YouTubes and promote the activism that we do to draw viewers and things.
Yep.
It would be cool to have like a theme song, and he wanted to use, and I think this would be so perfect that I'm really sucky at names and stuff, but I know that there's this reggae guy who sings stand up for your rights. You know that one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I thought that would be such a badass thing to do, but then I'm thinking, then what do we need to do as far as, you know, paying somebody for the rights to use that music, whereas we could get somebody talented and just starting like yourself, you know, that you've made a name and yet you're not like way out there yet, to actually compose some lyrics for us to get and put some music on and get it to be something really catchy that people will identify Gorilla Lawfare with.
So what you're saying, Tiger Lily, is you don't have to rob the bank to pay them.
Yeah, well, because there could be other ways of paying. Like, say, for example, if you once Gorilla Lawfare takes off, and you know, we've got people like Dave and I and Travis and Tim and Mark Temple, and you know, people that are very passionate in rights and in the activism and in educating others on how to stand up for your rights and things. That kind of passion, if we can channel it, there's a market for it. And just like if we were to get, once the website starts to draw more attention, it will be worth money to advertisers to advertise, and there could be royalties that could, you know, down the road be given by contract to somebody like our little Italian New Yorker that I'm sure looks really good.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple different things you can do. I mean, like what I've did in the past, I've licensed some of my songs to like indie films and to some compilation CDs, and some of them are just, you know, can we use your song and we'll give you a credit in the movie, or some of them, can we use your song, here's $25, or here's $100, or, you know, we'll market you in the post or whatever. You know, but yeah, I mean, I would have no problem as far as doing something for free and then, you know, with whatever you guys, you know, with your company supplies, you know, whether it's promotion or, you know, if you get a backing and like you said, you throw some royalties after a while or.
Right. That sort of thing.
Yeah. There's a couple different ways you can do it. You can go about it.
Right, because everything we do free of charge. I mean, we're not getting rich off of this, but I'm seeing down the road, Phil, and he's very passionate about rights, and he's so consistent in his radio blog. Twice a week, he's there. Come hell or high water, he's there doing his thing, and that's part of it. I was watching. I'm in Texas right now because I'm from Nevada, but I'm in Texas because I'm a first time grandmother, 50 years old, and it's so cool because I want the kid to call me Granny, and my daughter says, "You don't look like a granny. I think of the Beverly Hillbillies and that little old lady," and I says, "Well, that's me. I know I'm hot. You know, I'm like a gilf." But the thing is that it's like an oxymoron to hopefully I'll have a 10-year-old, 13-year-old kid that I'll go pick up from school and give him a ride home on the back of my motorcycle toting my gun, because that's what I do. I go around wearing a gun in Nevada. So here I am.
Thank you, Lily. Sorry? Let me interrupt you for a second.
Sure.
Frank. She's got she's got some videos on YouTube. This lady has bigger balls than some of the guys I know.
Oh boy.
And I get away with it a lot more than guys, I think, because when you're being an activist and you're in their face, in their grill with a video camera, kind of supervising what they're doing to make sure that these cops with their guns and their badges don't hurt the citizens, especially innocent citizens, it's a dangerous job, and it's more dangerous, even in my view, than in being a cop, because the cops have all of the resources of the government behind them, but I, as a lonely reporter, you know, will be there, and you know, if I overstep my bounds by somebody's opinion rather than by law, I could very well be killed. I mean, one of the YouTubes that got over 4,000 views already, it was just a 1 minute YouTube where I'm supervising these school district cops who are doing their thing, and they came up to me and they saw me with the camera and they said, "Hey, the lady with the camera, the lady." They came at me with their hands on their guns, telling me to put the camera down. So they handcuffed me for 56 minutes. Had I been a guy, you know, they probably would have, you know, tasered me and beaten me up or something like that. But you know, just the fact that I'm a girl and I don't look like an activist. I don't know if I used to be a Marine and people always like, "You were a Marine?" Because I don't look the part. I was a church girl and all that kind of stuff, which, you know, people don't believe it now, but so here I am in Texas and my daughter doesn't even have cable, so I'm depending on this antenna. She's got about 5 channels, and I kind of surf through them. And I don't have good computers, so I've got these major withdrawals going on because, you know, I'm wanting to get online and do my research and write articles and do stuff, and I'm just really, really having this chest pain, having to take extra Xanax to you know, be able to cope with that. But one of the things I saw is that these two chicks – they're you know, your typical Hollywood girls, you know, the rich bitches, you know, real cute, and all they do for a living, and they go and they shop, and I don't think they're even 20 years old yet. They go and they shop, and then they get on YouTube and they say, "This is what I bought today, and look, and I think this is so cute, and I'm really into the nautical theme this month."
Oh yeah.
And they've got 2 million followers, you guys. So I'm thinking to myself, there's no reason why somebody like Phil and all of us activists that are busy can't with what we do and with the passion that we have with activism, go out there, videotape various things about what's going on with our government. It's all really fun and it's things that people are like, "Are you serious? Does that really happen?" Like, I'll go into the police station and I'll say, "Can I get my report for, you know, the charges that were brought on me for this, that, and the other?" "Oh, no, you can't have that." "Well, why not?" "Oh, because they're confidential." "How can they be confidential if they're about me?" You know, I mean, that sort of thing. And people don't believe that, you know, you really get the hand. And this whole government thing is such that you get the hand so much that people really don't believe it. And what's cool, I just ran into a little bit of money that, well, my son owed me some money, and he ran into the money. So I got it. But I found a little spyware store. And so now I got a way to actually film by spying and just get the real raw footage of what these government bureaucrats do to their regular citizens to give us the hand. And I think that's interesting. And so I'm thinking there's no reason why we can't draw that kind of, you know, that kind of attention to build a viewership and a readership and a blog, and then sell advertising for these to kind of, I have no desire to become rich, but I do want enough money so that I want influence, so that there's a Sergeant Bedwell who's always constantly going on TV telling people bullshit about how somebody in this SUV killed somebody on a motorcycle. He just ran him over, right? And he's out there telling the media, yeah, and he wasn't wearing a helmet. Well, who cares? I mean, he got squashed like a bug. Not that he wasn't wearing a helmet. He was wearing a novelty helmet. So instead of, you know, doing real reporting, he's out there. And they covered my story when I got handcuffed. The local media, Channel 8 News, covered that story. And then they went to that same asshole, Sergeant Bedwell, and they said and he said, yeah, well, the problem is that, you know, our police officers have very dangerous work to do. And what's really sad is when people go around baiting them. And I'm thinking, there's no such thing as baiting if you've got probable cause. They had no probable cause to handcuff me. So that's why they're in trouble. And if they weren't doing anything wrong, which I found out they were, then they have nothing to fear to be videotaped. I mean, this is Las Vegas. Somebody's got a videotape. There's videotapes all over the casinos. And so I really wanted to squash this Sergeant Bedwell and tell him, you know, not only do we not bait the cops, but when we know that there's policies that are bad, we will contact him and the people in charge and say, look, what you guys are doing is wrong, and we're going to protest, and we're going to be there with our cameras. So how is that baiting, you know? So I would like to have not the money, but certainly the influence by having the 2 million people that these little rich girls have to be able to do a YouTube and say, look at what a douchebag this Sergeant Bedwell is. Look at what he said. He's all about how they didn't wear – They were wearing a novelty helmet and they got killed by an SUV. You know, it's like, are you real? You know, are you, get real. So
knife to a gunfight.
I'm sorry?
That's like bringing a knife to a gunfight.
Right. Right. So.
But
I'm sorry.
No.
What is
so
your the
go
first
ahead.
Name of our of what is your first name out there in New York?
Oh,
Frank.
Frank. Okay, Frank. I'll remember that. I'm really bad with names.
Yeah, I'm on, I don't know if you're on Facebook or anything, but if you want to send me some info about what you do and stuff, I can see if I can put some music together or whatever you guys have in store. I don't know.
I can hook you guys up. I'll take
okay.
care of that.
All right, thanks.
Phil is really good at that. Phil is really good at that.
You know, today we had 31,706 viewers to my blog today.
Oh, neat. Phil, your blog is so popular, Phil, that, you know, David had a helmet trial, and when Travis went to get discovery for the city of North Las Vegas, he managed to get a bunch of really cool stuff from the city of North Las Vegas, and what that Sergeant Bedwell that I was telling you about, what he had done, because I had warned him, I said, look, I'm going to go to your city council and I'm going to talk to the mayor and I'm going to let him, her, and all of the city council members know what a douchebag you are for what you're doing with these helmet citations. And he actually, Travis was able to bring up some discovery that showed that he had done a Google search on both me and David, and he got a bunch of stuff off of the Phil and Bill Webb Show website. And he presented all of that to the city, the city mayor, and said, and basically sent her an email basically saying, do not engage this crazy woman in any conversation because you won't win.
Oh, she's
out of her mind. So,
Frank, I'll tell you a quick one. When Tiger Lily got involved in this, she decided to make her own helmet. And do you know what a tiara looks like? You know what a tiara looks like?
No.
You know
that little thing with all the diamonds and stuff in it that, like, they give to Miss America?
Oh, yeah, I think so, yeah.
That's her helmet.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, that's my protest helmet. And it's fun to wear, and while wearing that in Nevada, because Nevada is a helmet. Frank, do you ride a motorcycle?
My dad does. I used to dirt bike ride, and he used to, you know, sit me on the front and stuff the bike, and I used to ride around a little bit, and I'm into it. But it's funny, we'd always wear a dirt bike helmet instead of a road bike helmet. I don't know why. We still do to this day.
Well, I'm here in Texas where people have the choice of wearing a helmet or not, and I'm so jealous. And because in Nevada, 21 states require anybody on a motorcycle to wear a helmet. And Nevada and California and the whole West Coast is part of those states, those manicrat states that force helmets on us. But the reality is that I like to say there's a few dead people, and there's a few people alive who say, gosh darn it, a helmet saved my life. But there are no dead people who can say a helmet killed me, or a helmet contributed to my demise, or a helmet blocked my view and that's why I died, or a helmet, you know, malfunctioned and scared me and I lost control of the bike and died. So
yeah.
So there's a badness moment. Like, even here, go ahead.
That's like when I got hit. It'll be 2 years this July, but that's like when I got hit. I was wearing a beanie helmet. And the doctor said right in front of the CHP, the Highway Patrol guy, if I was wearing a full face, they'd have been putting a sheet over me.
Yep.
Really?
Yes.
Right. Why is that?
Because it only takes 7 pounds of pressure to snap your neck. And when I had the bike almost back up and under control until I hit the bot dot and it flipped out from under me and threw me 65 feet. So I landed. Oh, I put my left ear on my left shoulder when I landed. And I broke my collarbone. So three plates, 48 screws, and I had wire in my jaw for a couple of days.
Ah.
Wow.
That must have sucked.
Yeah, that was one of the things that the government wants us not to know, because they've been hiding this information from us. But when 40 years ago, the feds forced all of the states to put helmets on all of the riders. They forced the state. They said, if you don't have a helmet law, we're not going to give you funds for your highways. And so that's how that got started 40 years ago. It was coercion, it was blackmail. And
and
what they discovered in your state, in New York, they did a fantastic study that was very quickly hidden, but there are people who have it. And in fact, somebody just emailed that to me. The neck injuries skyrocketed in New York. From the time that they forced helmets on people. The other thing is, you know, a lot of people don't realize, you know, like when I wear a big old helmet and I'm going 75 miles an hour, which is what you can go in Nevada, and a lot of times we have a lot of open space, so I go a lot faster if there's no cops around. But it's like you're wearing a parachute, and if you need to turn to make sure that your lane is clear before changing, you can lose control. So a lot of people, you know, just kind of take that for granted. And when legislators take a look at the helmet laws, they're like, oh, you know, the assumption is helmets save lives. And if you don't wear one, you're going to end up being a drooler. You'll end up as a quadriplegic. But, you know, that's a misnomer, because where in the heck is there any institution that has a bunch of droolers in it? There may be one or two And I don't, and I was a nurse for 10 years. I never took care of anybody who was a quadriplegic because they weren't wearing a helmet. I took care of a few quadriplegics who got that way at a VA hospital from, you know, going to combat, and a few of them for having head injuries while they were driving a car, which, by the way, there are many more head injuries by driving a car, regardless of the seatbelt, than there are by riding a motorcycle. And
that's correct.
Right. So why is it that we're not forcing helmets on people in cars? Because there's so many people driving cars that they would not tolerate that. They would get voted out immediately. But we are a minority. And I think that the vast majority of people who don't ride motorcycles, they don't understand what it is to be on a motorcycle. And even some motorcyclists, I get kind of pissed off with them because they want to really crucify the car drivers who run us over. Well, you know what? We choose to ride a motorcycle, and we are going to be less visible than people in a car. So there is an extra amount of danger.
There's a certain risk to it.
Right.
There's a certain risk with anything. You can fall asleep in the bathtub and be a vegetable for the rest of your life. But what it all boils down to, Frank, and this is me, is I don't want to be told. I want to be given the choice.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And then,
yeah, I mean,
because
we have to wear helmets in New York State, and, you know, once in a while.
No, you don't have to wear anything if you don't want to. It's the choice that you make. I go out, I wear a bandana, or I wear a beanie helmet. Now, lately, I fuck with them. One day I'll wear a bandana, the next day I'll wear a beanie helmet. The third day I wear a full face with a dark shield. You can't tell me. They can't tell who it is. That's how stupid. Well, they know, you know, the guys that know me know who I am. It's the new ones that they move from the other side of town that don't know me. They want to start the hassle. That's when the fun starts.
Yeah, well, you take a risk. If you're in a helmet state, you take a risk that if you're not wearing a helmet, you're going to get a ticket. You're going to get stopped, and you can potentially even get your motorcycle impounded. So a lot
probably
of people
guaranteed.
Don't want to take that risk.
Especially around here.
Oh, yeah. And you want to talk about that. I mean, I realize, I think New York State was the first one, or maybe the second one, to have those motorcycle-only checkpoints. Those are so unconstitutional. And I think I heard you at the beginning of the show, Phil, talking about, was it New Hampshire or somebody that said that they're not going to accept grant money for motorcycle-only checkpoints?
New Hampshire.
Well, the thought that came to my mind, because these sneaky fuckers are so sneaky, they might very well say or agree not to take grant money to do motorcycle-only checkpoints, but they're still going to do things like they do in Nevada. They take grant money and give them to local cities and say, this is for motorcycle safety. Oh, okay, well, they can't do checkpoints. They won't do a checkpoint, but that's not going to stop them from detaining motorcyclists who they think are wearing a novelty helmet to inspect their helmets. And that was one of the articles, the stories that I reported on back in November, because in June of last year, a year ago this time, there was an initiative. There was, I think, $85,000 that was given to the city of North Las Vegas for motorcycle safety. Now, they justified getting that money, and they got it from the state of Nevada, but not from the feds, but they justified it because there had been three deaths, motorcycle deaths, in a period of 4 months or something, which was high, you know, that's high. But when you look at, you know, what caused the deaths, it wasn't the helmets that caused the deaths. It was stupid drivers that weren't looking. They were killing us. So instead of spending that money on, like, maybe an awareness campaign, putting on TV, watch out for motorcyclists or something like that, they spent that money to give overtime to the cops so that they could pull over motorcyclists to do helmet checks. Now, how is that even constitutional?
Maybe, too, some of the people that, you know, get in the accidents and stuff aren't really that great drivers. I mean, there's not great car drivers either, so is not going to be a great motorcycle driver.
Right. And in one case it was an old fart, he was 85 years old, that had a big SUV or truck or something, who just didn't see the motorcyclist and ran him over. But it was a politically incorrect to say it was an old fart who probably needed some reading glasses, or, you know. So they blamed it all on what the guy was wearing on the head. So I liken that to the woman that gets raped because she looked too good. I mean, it's her fault. I mean, how dare she dress nicely?
Yeah.
You know, and it's the motorcyclist's fault for dying. I mean, how dare they not wear, you know, a helmet, regardless of, you know, they ran over their chest and it was a crush wound, you know, a crush death. They're still going to look at the helmet. So there's a lot to that.
Yeah. So the story that you wrote about the two school cops.
Uh huh.
That's being picked up, you said? I heard that last, but I'll let you tell the story.
I wrote an article, and I wrote it for the June magazine, and I just submitted one for July, but the one for June magazine, it was basically a recap, because this was like my one-year anniversary of Quick Throttle magazine. But it was I got the picture, because I got the video of the cops that detained me because I was videotaping them, and I stilled the camera and got a really great picture where my boss said, "God, that looks scary as shit, Tiger Lily," you know, because they came at me with their hands on their guns and with showing me the hand, telling me to stop recording, and I did, so I talked about how the police state is out of control, and here I was just trying to, you know, just new kid on the block. I was a nurse before, you know, I was a burned out nurse, and I thought, well, let me just. My husband says, "What do you want to do?" And I said, "Well, I like riding motorcycles, and I like writing articles," because I had been published like in various publications on healthcare issues. And he said, "Well, why don't you write about motorcycle riding?" And so the stars kind of all aligned, and I ended up with Quick Throttle magazine, and I heard about this story, and I hate wearing helmets, but I heard about this story about 56 helmet tickets that were dismissed in Henderson, Nevada, and so I studied up on that, and then I realized, yeah, that helmet laws are unenforceable unless you're not wearing absolutely anything on your head. If you're even wearing a coconut shell on your head, you can't really prove that the law is unenforceable, because basically the law says you have to wear headgear, and then it refers to an administrative code, and then the administrative code says to adopt federal standards. And when you look at what the standards is, all it is a test. So the only way to know if your helmet is legal or not legal is to test the helmet in a laboratory. And in order to test it, you would destroy it, and the government doesn't have the authority to destroy your property. So that's how it's unenforceable. And so I researched that, and from that, you know, I thought, well, I'm going to start, you know, testing it by wearing a tiara. And I strapped on a tiara on my head, and I got detained 5 times, and of the 5 times, I got 2 tickets. And the rest of the times, even I went through a DUI checkpoint, and they detained me, and they said, and they kind of huddled. It was about 6 cops. There were about 20 altogether, but about 6 of them huddled together, and you could see that on YouTube. And they're like, yeah, I guess it's legal. Let her go. So they let me go. An hour earlier, I had gotten my first helmet ticket for that same tiara, you know. So that's how vague the law is and how unenforceable it is. So from there, I started, I'm sorry?
Generally, wait a minute. Frank, what you got to understand is you know, most people are pissed off when they get a ticket, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, Lily's not.
I call it trolling for tickets, because I just can't wait to get a ticket. And so I got my ticket, and 2 of them, and I'm going to go to trial in August. The first ticket was there in August, and my trial is going to be in August, a year later. So much for you have a right to a speedy trial, right? I got another one. My pretrial is going to be on July 12th. For that one, that's just a pretrial. Then after that, you know, long story short, you know, I probably won't go to trial for that one until September, if it goes to trial at all, because it's looking like there's so many of us that are starting to challenge these bullshit tickets that the DA is saying, why don't we just dismiss this, you know, because it's costing them a lot more to prosecute, which is the whole idea, you know.
The average ticket, Frank, it can run anywhere, depending on the jurisdiction, but it can run anywhere from $4,500 to $5,400. Just over what is it in Nevada, Tiger Lily? $150 for the ticket?
In Nevada, City of North Las Vegas has the highest one. It's $302.
Wow.
Yeah, for a health ticket. Oof. Yeah. And I think it's $195 for Las Vegas. So I've got two tickets that are both $200, each $200. So,
wow.
So I'm not paying for it. You know, I want my day in court. I want to face my accuser, and I want to make my accuser feel like a total dumbass when I ask him, have you been trained on what a legal helmet is? Can you just look at one and know? Because there's all kinds of full face helmets that don't meet the criteria. But if you're wearing a full face helmet, you'll never get stopped over a helmet. You know what I mean? There's no way, literally no way, to look at a helmet and tell if it's legal or not legal. And we've had problems with judges. But anyway, to finish off on the story of my latest article, it was basically, I said, because of all of these activities that I've done, and I also covered a story it was a crotch rocket party that got raided by SWAT, ATF, FBI, City of North Las Vegas, Metro Health Department, Gaming Commission, and another, it's like seven or eight of them. And it was nothing. They had done absolutely nothing. They simply were on the radar because they had supported a Hell's Angels booth at a previous event a couple of months earlier. So the bottom line is this. The local law enforcement agencies have too much money on their hands. They're given SWAT teams, and they're you know, allotted money for things, and they have to use it or lose it. It's like, if you don't use this stuff, then we're gonna, you know, take it away from you, and we're gonna put those resources to another agency that may need it more. So that's part of why they've become so militarized. You know, they come in with guns drawn and the whole nine yards. So based on all of these things that I've been investigating, it's like, wow, you know, here I was just minding my own business, being a nurse, not really realizing that our constitutional rights are being taken away because I wasn't in the in crowd. I mean, I didn't smoke dope. I didn't, you know, I was just a law-abiding person who went to work and all of that. And then I started doing this reporting, and I'd go to these clubs, various motorcycle clubs, and they'd tell me these stories that I'm thinking to myself, wow, you know, it's not that I didn't believe them, but they were just so outrageous that it just seemed like an exaggeration or like maybe if you didn't have so many tattoos, you know, you're like a walking target, I'm thinking to myself, right? Well,
yeah.
No, it happened to me, and it happened to my husband when the first time I got detained, where a Nevada highway trooper really treated me horribly. And I asked for the you know, I didn't get a ticket. She just was just so demeaning and yelled at my husband and said, you sit, treated him like a dog. And she said, you know, I've been in this town long enough to know that there's a lot of crazy drivers in town, and if somebody hits you, that thing you're wearing on your head isn't going to save your life. Well, I started to open my mouth to say something, and she hollers at me and points in my face and says, you don't speak until I'm finished speaking. And I'm thinking, whoa, she's the one with the gun and the badge. I ain't saying a damn thing, you know. And I'm thinking, this little girl needs a spanking because I'm old enough to be her mother. I may not look it, but, you know, I've got a daughter that's 26 and a son that's 28, and you know, is this how the motorcyclists are getting treated? So that was like the rude awakening to me about you know, what's going on. So I talked about how in my article, how at one point I realizing that there are more freedoms in other countries than in my own country, because everywhere you turn, you can't even, you know, spit without getting a littering ticket, you know, in Nevada,
yeah,
especially.
Yeah, but hey, what about
2 weeks
the people
ago,
that
I watched somebody walk
cigarette.
Out the bar, light a cigarette, and then all of a sudden flick an ash, and it was a $100 ticket.
Yeah.
There you go. I mean, there's so many, it's easy, and it's so easy to become a felon. Somebody laughed at me when I said that, but in the state of Florida, I think they just changed this law, but in the state of Florida, if you've got a motorcycle and you're sporting your license plate vertically, that was a felony. So if you're convicted of a felony, you can no longer own a gun legally, you know? And so it's like, wow. So I talked about how I considered just moving to another country because what the fuck? I mean, here I am, a United States Marine Corps veteran who served my country, and everywhere you turn, you get taxed to death. And what's happening is because of the economy being so bad, and I know in Nevada has the worst unemployment and highest foreclosure rate in the entire country, and agencies and the government is losing money. So in order for them to get more money, what they do is kick up the law enforcement. And so they pull you over for anything, for tinted windows or for anything, and check to see if you have, you know, papers, please, kind of like the Nazis, you know. I want to see your papers, you know. You've got a driver's license. Is it current? Is your insurance current? How about your registration? And they'll take a flashlight if it's dark time to take a look inside your car, and you have a right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures. But little by little, they're taking those rights away. And so I in my article I talked about how I considered just moving away. But the game changer was when my daughter told me she was pregnant, and I thought, well, shit, now I'm going to be a grandmother. And you know what? Maybe that was the motivation that kept me grounded and kept me willing to fight it out just a little bit more. And that article, evidently, my husband says that's the best article I've ever written because it was very
heartfelt. It is a very good article.
Well, thank you.
Very good article.
Bill.
You can go to quickthrottle.com and you can read that article.
And so I thought that's the game changer. I'm going to give it a little bit more. So since that time, that I wrote that article. It was I forget the date, but it was the weekend before Memorial Day. My son got detained. He's an open carrier like I am, and he got detained because his and bless his heart, I tell him, you look like a criminal, son, because number one, he's got tattoos. But he's very clean cut. He's always got a pimped out car. He always has a very, so he looks like somebody who's a drug dealer, you know, because he's got, you know, he drives an Infiniti and they pulled him over because of the tint. So they asked him for his registration and proof of insurance and everything. And he was with his hot chick girlfriend that he's going to marry pretty soon. He says, "Well, I'm gonna keep my hands on my steering wheel, but you should know that I am an open carrier and I've got my gun, and it is loaded with one in the chamber, and I've got a wallet, and I have to get by it to get to my wallet." And so the cop called a code 413 or something, and he got surrounded by cops. They got him out of the car, handcuffed him, impounded his car, and basically the reason for that was because the city of North Las Vegas has an outdated ordinance that you're not supposed to be traveling through the city with a dangerous weapon in the car. So that city ordinance was preempted in 2007 or 8 or something. So the gun rights activists have been waiting for a moment like this. So he's got the perfect case now. But what makes it even more tragic is that my son had a very horrendous accident back in December, for which he damaged his arm, and he's had three major surgeries on it. And he keeps a stocking on it because it's so gross looking, and because, you know, you can practically see the bone. It's he's had skin grafts, and it's really, really bad.
Ouch.
The doctor is a wonderful doctor. He's worked really hard to make, you know, to keep his arm. I mean, he almost lost it, and he told the guys, "I have an injured arm." They didn't give a shit. They handcuffed him, manhandled him, and And my daughter-in-law to be called, and she says, Carlo said to come over. He's being arrested. So I said, okay, Mama's coming. You know, so I didn't take my gun because I didn't want to escalate things. I got on my motorcycle. I went over there, and I took my camera, and I was about 30 feet away, which was very far. And they said, go away. You have no business here. And I said, is it illegal to videotape? She says, no, but just don't come any closer. And I said, well, I have a question because that's my son you have there. And the guy, the sergeant came right over, snatched my camera, handcuffed me, and away we both went to jail for 24 hours.
Oh, my God.
Yes, this is how aggressive they are. But the thing is, they jacked up my son's arm really badly. And
yeah,
when my son told the physician, his physician was outraged. His physician looks like East meets West. You know that guy that Asian guy that does that cooking on the channel, cooking channel. He's a good looking, muscular. He's a real hot guy. I hate doctors. So I used to be a nurse, but this is one doctor I would do because he is just like so hot, and I really like him. And this is how I talk. I've been happily married 29 years, and I've been faithful and all of that. But this is how I describe people as whether I would do them or not. So
hang on. Hold on, Tiger Lily. Hey, Frank.
Yeah.
No, Frank. When she goes in, I exchange information. I'm gonna send her a picture of you. She might want to do you too.
Oh boy.
Well, this
probably
doctor,
her son's like, age.
Well, I'm a gilf now, so. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Oh God. Yeah.
So,
not 1 minute. I got you know Merlin, right?
Oh yes. Yes. He was in Chicago recently.
I unmuted Merlin, and Merlin, are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Hey, Merlin.
Okay.
Hello, Tiger Lily.
Merlin, I have Tiger Lily and Frank Palangi out of New York on the line. Pete from Boston is on, too, but I haven't heard from him yet. Are you there, Pete? He might just be listening. Anyway, Merlin, you got any questions from either of these two?
No, other than which Vegas Metro cop did you kick to escalate their whole attitude? They really have turned nutso in the last 90 days. They went from stupid to full goose loony.
Well, yeah, you heard about the guy that actually got his nose broken by a cop that kicked him in the nose for videotaping. You know that, right?
Yeah, heard that one.
Oh,
yeah,
my God.
Heard that one.
Yeah.
One of the guys that I've been hanging with lately, he's a Las Vegas resident several months of the year, the cool months, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling him a certain amount of the stuff that you've passed on and I've heard otherwhere. And he can't believe it. Then he gets a phone call from a friend of his who needs about $3,000 bail money.
Thank you.
And then he started to believe it because it was something absolutely stupid.
Merlin,
within a couple of days, they had, you know, totally zeroed the whole thing out, except now the guy's attorney wants in big time because they're going to go after the LVP. And this is a 68-year-old retired man. He was in his Lincoln driving home, doesn't drink, carries, I think, about an 18-year chit from Bill W. You know, seriously, why are you even bothering this guy? If he ran a stop sign, write the ticket. But anyway, it's not just the bikes. It's everything.
It's everybody. Well, see, my son wasn't on his bike at the time. He was in the car. And when he told his doctor, the doctor was so outraged, and he hates those cops because he drives a Mercedes-Benz with tinted windows, and he got pulled over for tinted windows. And, of course, he's a doctor, so he was arrogant, and he gave him some attitude. So the cop didn't appreciate the attitude. They handcuffed this doctor for 2 hours in front of his kid to show him a lesson, to teach him a lesson. So
did you ever hear? I'm sorry.
So this doctor is very motivated to write a nice report on how badly they screwed up my son's arm.
Yeah.
Because
the
lawsuit
like
is forthcoming.
Like the Hollywood stars and stuff, they have tinted windows, you know, windows and stuff like that too. And I've even thought of that. And you know, I don't know how they get away with it, but
does the cop know you or not? Chico Yazco, years ago, Chico was Bolt, Florida, in 92, 93, you know, the early years. And he told me one time of a judge, a federal judge, who on his bike, young officer decided to pull this old man over. And so the judge, who carries, had it in the back of his belt, stuck both hands up in the air, informed the officer that I am permitted and do carry. Didn't explain he was a federal judge, just that, you know, went for the basics. You need to know I have a gun.
Right.
The cop ducks down behind the door, pulls his piece, and for the next half hour in the hot Florida sun, this 58-year-old federal judge is standing there with his hands up and trying to get the officer to either allow me to pull the weapon out and hand it to you, set it down, kick it over to you, whatever, or call for help. But the kid just stood there and said, "Do you just wait. Finally, somebody decided that the officer had not reported in, and they went looking for him and found him. And first officer on the scene sees what's going on. Here's a guy on a bike, both hands up. The officer is down in the fully locked and loaded position. And so about nine other cars show up from 13 directions. One of those cars is a full police captain for the city or county, whatever, recognizes the judge, takes immediate, as was his rank, takes immediate control of the situation, tells everybody to put your weapons away, stand down, you nine guys go home, this is not a problem, asks the judge, "Do you need water? You put your hands down, Your Honor," you know, and the kid suddenly begins to realize what's going on. He had just grabbed the wrong rattlesnake, and this judge proceeded to tear that police department apart.
Good.
He went back looking for cases to where there was the hint of excessive force or overzealous, or what do you mean you spent an hour in the station while that person's still handcuffed in a chair? Why weren't they just set in a cell and the cuffs removed, as is policy? I mean, just he had people in and out of his court and chambers and district attorneys just, you know, praying to God he wasn't going to come after their case. But that's what it took in that particular venue.
And it shouldn't be that way, because
just
as many rights as that damn judge.
Well, you have every right as that judge, and it's what's interesting is you said, and they're taking the rights away. What they're doing is they're not taking the rights away, but they are convincing everybody that you don't have them anyway.
Yes.
And so it's not like the rights are going away. It's they're being... The real value, the real use is being just dissipated, and it's done with everything from, you know, it sounds almost conspiratorial, but they don't teach high school civics anymore, okay?
Right.
Nobody
right.
teaches constitutional law in high school. I had the opportunity this week to tutor a young lady for about an hour and a half on constitutional law. A friend of mine says, oh, you need to tutor in a class on law? Here's my lawyer, and he drags me out of the truck and sets me down. It was great because she was trying to learn, and boy, she had her eyes opened up. It's you have to, and I really applaud you for this, Tiger Lily. You are staying on it and in their face, and this is a brave and frustrating thing to do, and I applaud you very much.
Thank you.
And encourage you, and sooner or later I will be back in Nevada, and I'm really looking forward to a face-to-face with you without
absolutely.
And you can videotape me anytime you feel so disposed. Most people don't
want. Can I videotape you naked?
You know,
I'm so
damn
only
flattered by the question. You know, I'm so damn flattered by the question. Sure.
It was funny when my grandchild was born. I called my husband up and I said, and he's got a gigantic penis, you know. And the doctor says, oh my God, she is from Las Vegas, where anatomy is everything.
Anatomy is everything.
What I'd like to do is ask you guys to hold on. I'm going to play one of Frank's songs. I need to get something to drink here, and we'll play one of Frank's songs. It's called Remembrance, and we'll be right back, okay? I'm going to leave everybody unmuted.
You got driving these lines, sir?
I'm sorry?
I was going to say, do you have driving these lines, that song? Or?
I didn't load that one up, but I can play this one, and I can get to that one in a little bit.
Okay, cool, because that's the newest one.
Okay.
Goes with the kind of the stuff we're talking about a little bit, too.
Cool, maybe that's the one we need for our guerrilla lawfare.
Maybe.
Okay, this
I
one's called
waiting,
Playing Remembrance.
All righty.
Thank you.
that was remembered by Frank Belangi.
Nice.
Okay, well, everybody there?
Yep.
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So, Merlin.
Yes.
Where are you at?
Right now, I am in Somersville, West Virginia, on the west side of the Appalachians. I am at the night before a four-day bluegrass festival. And what was supposed to be a bunch of really neat music has turned into a kind of a soggy, nobody's out there kind of a night. But
is it raining?
I was, yeah, a little off and on. Just enough to take the edge out of a bunch of what should have been amazing jam sessions. Bluegrass festivals, the best music is in the campground. Hey, I got told today about an event in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, coming up. It's a four-day event this weekend. It's called Thunder in the Valley. Anybody know anything about it? I may look it up on the internet, but I was told it's really, really good. This is the 9th or 10th year, something like that, and it's the town is behind it, and everybody comes in, and so by Thursday, I may be giving you a report from the Thunder in the Valley, Johnstown, Pennsylvania.
Okay. Cool.
What a life.
Hey, Frank,
yeah.
Do me a favor and send me that song because I can't get it to open. I don't know what's wrong. We're usually on a pretty good thing with that, but I got get a little feedback from somewhere.
What do you think of that acoustic tune, guys?
I like it.
There's a music video for it on YouTube. If you go to youtube.com/Plangi Studios, you guys can take a look at that too if you want to.
Cool.
How do you spell Plangi?
It's Palangi.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
All right.
I had I met the first jerk of the trip.
Uh-oh.
14 months, 38,000 miles, I finally found him. Turned out it was the guy I was staying in his campground for nearly 2 weeks working on his event. When he very proudly told me that, yeah, he just accepted a $1,000 offer to fix the raffle. I knew that this was not somebody I wanted to continue dealing with.
Wow.
No.
He was raffling off a 77 Sportster Ironhead. Just a runner, but kind of raggy. And I said, wait, you can't do that. It's not right. And he said, everybody does it. And do it all the time. And I go, no, I have dealt with these things for years in bikes and air shows and everything else, and nobody fixes a raffle. It's just not done. And
no, that's a good way to get the shit beat out of you, too.
Well, apparently in that corner of Arkansas, the police have a dope crack house, and the judge's wife is the chef, and so, maybe it's not a problem, but it was amazing. The guys, his son, 40-year-old son, cheating on welfare and house or child support and everything else, calls one day and wants to know how much money he can earn before they up his child support because he didn't want to earn too much money. And I just thought, so that's why I left 4 days before the event, and the big event was on the July 4th, and this is the one where he was fixing the raffle, and the whole thing was kind of shaky anyway. Hey, Bill, quick question about Harley-Davidsons. Typically, a 1998 Sportster, the serial numbers of the motor match the paper and match the frame, right?
You should, yes.
Yeah, and if they don't, it's...
You're going to jail.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to explain to him. And he said, oh, no. Oh, God. So anyway, that's why I'm in West Virginia, because they're really, really cool here. Had a guy,
that's good.
Guy stopped, talked to me in a gas station this morning. He's on a Harley, pulls in behind me, And we talk a little bit, and he finds out what I'm doing, and I mentioned that I was, you know, on the skinny side of the wallet. And I ride on ahead, you know, we part, and I ride on ahead, and then about 10, 15 minutes later, he's coming up the road behind me and then sits behind me for a little while. And I pull over and let him pass because he's obviously doing faster than I am. And he pulls up alongside of me, locks his throttle, and reaches over and hands me $20.
Wow.
And then just waved, rolled the throttle back on, and went off. His name's Bill. He lives in Glendenin, West Virginia, and he's really, really worth knowing because he just did it. No big deal, no, you know, just a wave for a thanks, and yeah, those are the people I keep meeting, and then you get one jerk to make the other guy so outstanding, you know, but.
Right.
Well,
since
we're all talking about going back and forth and running around, I've got Frank's song, Driving These Lines, loaded up.
Oh,
let's give a listen to this, and then we'll come back after that.
Sounds good.
Hey, guys, coming out. Thanks to Jesse and Mike from Black and Blue Productions for having us. This next song we just got back from Tennessee writing. The song is called Driving These Lines.
Oh, it's from a video.
The wrong one?
This is from a video. It's not the recorded version, but...
How do I get to the recorded version? Because I just got this one to load.
Oh, really? Is that on YouTube or something?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I sent you an email with the MP3 files.
Mm-hmm. But the one wouldn't open up for some reason. I don't know why.
Oh, okay. I mean, you can stream it from at sonicbids.com/Frank Polangi. You can stream it from there. I'll email you that song again, too.
Okay. And you said Sonic Bids?
Yep, sonicbids.com/Frank Polangi. Should be the second song on there.
Go ahead. So, Merlin. So
yeah.
Where are you going? Are you going to stay in West Virginia, or are you going somewhere else?
I think I'm going to go ahead and work my way up to that event at Johnstown. I haven't been to just a nice big good old bike rally in a while. And while the roads here are just phenomenal, it's $40 a day to participate or to be here at this plus camping. At this, bluegrass festival, that's out of the question. The guy let me in tonight. He said, "Well, you know, if you just want to camp tonight here, park on the lawn, and no problem." And he gave it to me, but he said, "Tomorrow morning, everybody's going to be looking for wristbands, so you either need to buy one or boogie." And I said, "I'm gone," but he did. He gave me the night, so I'm going to follow the back roads because they really are some. There's some sweet ones here, and the people are neat. And I'm going to go up to Johnstown, take a look, and hopefully, you know, the weather's been rotten. Takes 2 days to dry a T-shirt, that kind of humidity. And you're actually better off if you just go ahead and let the exhaust pipes blow it dry. works on warming your boots. Don't laugh.
I got it queued up again from where Frank said, and we're going to give it a listen. It's called Driving These Lines. Thank you. Nice. I like that. I think you found your song, Tiger Lily.
Yeah, it was too staticky, but I could tell. It was, the static didn't do it justice. I could tell it's got a, it sounds really good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we got to get you guys a sponsor.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is such a cool thing, going all over the country. That has been one of my dreams, and I told my husband I was going to go all the way to Argentina, and the fact that I have a grandchild, that's the reason why I'm not headed that way right now. He says, oh, the drug cartels are going to kill you in Mexico. You're not going to get past Mexico. Well, who cares? I mean, you're going to die.
I bumped into a 21 or 22-year-old kid in Colorado last summer. Mm-hmm. And he bought a bike about 4 weeks earlier, never owned one before, bought this thing, went out, rode it around, decided, man, this is neat. I'm going to Alaska. And I meet him in Colorado, and I'm going, kid, that's ballsy. And we start talking. His name's Dan Jones. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, I'll tell you what, I've played this game a little bit. Let's see if we can help you out. So we sat down with his bike and his equipment, and we talked, and we worked on stuff for a couple of days, and then off he went. Mm-hmm. And I lose track of him, but we exchanged. I carry travel cards with me. It's like a business card, only it just has my phone number and email because I have no address. And it says The Last Road Trip, T. Merlin Bianco and Duke the Wonder Bike, Finding America, One Suggestination at a Time, and then it's got the numbers. And down at the bottom line of it, the card says, can you tell me where to go? And nobody's done the obvious, and don't do it now. But... So I'd given the kid a couple of cards. So about 4 or 5 months later, a couple of months ago, I get a call or I get an email, and he reminds me who he is and everything, and that he did the trip to Alaska went great. He had a great time, and when it started to get cold, he started heading south. And he got into Long Beach, California, and it still wasn't so warm enough, so he headed souther. Mm-hmm. He's emailing from Ecuador. He had written.
Oh, my God.
So this is his first road trip, and it includes Oklahoma, Alaska, and Ecuador. Now, he's still in Ecuador. It's 2 months later. He's still in Ecuador. Apparently, she is really cute. He said he met a girl, and I emailed back that, you know, that's the root of all evil, but have a good time. And... you know, I met a girl on a road trip once, married her. She's now considered the minor marriage, but nevertheless. and so here it is. People are doing it. But as he and I have flipped messages back and forth, we both understand when the other one says, it really is a certain kind of madness, isn't it? Yesterday, lonely. I just hit a set of blues that wouldn't go away. I was lonely. And a couple of phone calls back to the coast and took a lot of it away. But it just every so often, meeting new people. And I'd spent 2 days with the father of a long, long time friend of mine there in Oceanside, visiting in Lexington, Kentucky, but just got to where you miss everybody. I missed my granddaughter's first birthday. I was there for her birth, but I missed the birthday. And, you know, and okay, I missed a lot of people's birthdays over the years. But it's a trade-off, like everything else. And
right.
sometimes it just slaps you. And yesterday was, you know, one of those days. Today I woke up and I was feeling a little better.
Yeah, I'm so proud of you for admitting that, because most men will not admit it. And that happened to my husband when he turned 60 years old. I was still a nurse, and I saved up, and I said, what do you want to do for your 60th birthday? So he says, let's go to Hawaii. So I did a two-week deal in Hawaii in Maui, and we did this. I had planned to do the snorkeling. Long story short, he was just not with the program. And he pissed me off so badly, and I kept saying, what's the matter? Are you depressed? What the hell? No, because men never admit the blues, you know. And I think it was because he had turned 60. And I got to the point where I said, you know what, I'm going back to Las Vegas. He goes, well, I'm going with you. I said, oh, hell no, you're staying your ass right here. You're going to enjoy every fucking day.
Yeah,
every damn penny I spent on you. That was a lot of bloody vaginas I cleaned to put you on this vacation. And I'm going back to Las Vegas and reevaluate whether or not I want to live the rest of my life with an old geezer. So he cried.
And he felt better afterwards, probably.
Yes, he felt better. He cried, and then I felt bad because I kind of crossed the line a little bit. But
yeah,
but I was
yeah,
really
the bloody vagina part, that's a little heavy. Yeah. You know? We don't mind playing with him, but we don't want to know all the details.
Exactly.
Well, yeah.
Right now we have a caller from 845. Do you want to just listen or you want to talk? 845?
Yep, I'm just listening right now.
Okay.
Hey,
are you there? Hang on. RJ, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good, dude. Just playing poker.
Okay. We have Frank Palangi on out of New York. He's one of the new artists, and we're playing his songs. And Tiger Lily out of Nevada, which she's in Texas right now, but she's out of Nevada. And then Merlin's calling out from West Virginia. This is RJ. He's the, Frank, he's the manager of Attica 7.
Oh, okay. What's going on?
Not much, just resting.
I heard a couple of band songs there that Philip played there.
Yeah, what do you think?
I like them. They're kind of like a Rob Zombie meets a Drowning Pool.
Yeah, it's different. It's kind of an original sound we got going
yeah.
on.
We got
anyway, I've been listening to everyone's conversations there. Man, this is it's funny. This radio show here becomes addictive.
That's cool.
So
I like that.
Yeah.
Tell your friends. But
RJ,
keep it. As soon as you start talking about it, everybody wants a hit.
You can hook up with me on Facebook if you want, and I'll send you some of my tunes and stuff.
I think I got your CD from Philip.
I sent him a copy, Frank. I told you I was going to do that, and it totally got the same thing.
Yeah, send him the new stuff there, yeah.
Okay. And then, Pete, we have Pete out of Boston. Are you there, Pete?
Hey, Phil.
Hey, Pete.
What's up, man?
How's everybody doing?
Good.
Hey, Pete.
I tried to call in earlier from my cell phone, but I was doing 120 miles an hour on my Porsche, and I lost reception.
Ooh, that's sexy.
True story. So here I am.
Yeah, you know, and being called that sick woman who leaves her husband in Hawaii can't be all bad, right?
Hey, Merlin.
I didn't leave.
Yes.
Thanks for adding me on Facebook, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, you know, my pleasure. You're a damn sight younger than you sound. So either you're aging gracefully, or you've been drinking some good whiskey.
I've been chasing the dragon for quite a few years, so I don't know why people think I look young. You know.
Well, somehow or other, I expected somebody my age, and I popped this guy that yeah, he really does know where the good bars are. Around my age, we start forgetting where the good bars are.
Young man.
What's going on tonight there, Peter?
What's that?
I said, what's going on tonight there, Peter?
Well, I just got in. I took my Porsche out, and I did about 120 down the highway, and I was trying to call into the radio show, and my cell phone, I had no signal probably because I was going so fast, so I'm calling from my house phone now. Not much going on. I'm very tired, you know, just trying to take it easy.
Yeah. 10:40 here, so it's a little bit later.
Yeah. In fact, I'm starting to crap out on you folks. Rain's starting to roll back in, so I think I'm going to pitch out here.
All right, man.
All right, Merlin.
It is always fun, folks. Thank you much.
Merlin, you need to give me a call if you get depressed. I'll cheer you up.
You know what? You just might get the call.
All right.
You're a hoot, without a doubt. Talk to you guys later.
I hear everybody.
Bill, yeah, man. Screwdriver Bill, thank you much, as always. We'll talk to you later. Pete.
Okay, bye-bye.
Take care, man.
So Peter here, he's a music guy.
Yeah.
He knows a little bit of my side here.
Oh, yeah, we've been talking. We got get things going on.
But the reason I asked RJ to call in was, one, so I could introduce you two guys together and so match the faces with the voices. But RJ, how we doing on the Trigger Gum jump bike?
We are doing well. Just got the customized sprocket done. A lot of things are going on right now with the jump in regards to the media side. You know, it seems as though in this business, everybody's fickle and they like to come in at the last minute. So sponsorships are starting to come out of this, getting a lot of press. Going to be filming a 30 to 60 minute special on this. Metal Militia is coming in and going to do some filming for their movie that they're doing called Black Sunday, since Trigger's a militia writer. And just getting ready for the whole thing. It's actually pretty exciting. It's the talk of Sturgis from what they're saying.
A movie about a militia writer?
No, it's a movie called...
They're not that kind of militia.
Oh.
Metallica, Metal Militia?
Motocross, you know, it's freestyle. It's all about freestyle motocross and daredevil jumping.
Okay.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
we're doing.
I love the music and that kind of stuff. It's all heavy stuff, you know.
Yeah, I work for a writer. His name is Trigger Gum, and he's been a daredevil writer for years. He was actually handed down the torch by Evel Knievel for his daredevil skills, and this year.
Wow.
Oh, we'll be
cool.
Attempting to beat the record on a Harley Sportster on a distance jump. So, got about quarter mile, 150 to 200 foot jump, 80 miles an hour, good to go.
Wow.
So,
that bike is being built at Illusion Motorcycles. You can get to them at illusionmotorcycles.com. That's Rusty and T-Rod. And if you go on illusionmotorcycles.com, I think there's some sites there. Or if you go on their Facebook page, you can see it there too, as well as RJ's. You can see it on Attica 7's page.
Yeah, you can go to. We all have Facebook. Oh my gosh, you can go on my Facebook and add me if you want, and you get all the information and updates on what's going on. I pretty much live on my phone, but it's pretty exciting.
How do you spell the band name there?
ATTIKA, and then the number 7.
Okay.
Yeah, so lots of good things happening for us. Payday coming soon.
Okay.
Hey, Phil.
Still there, guys?
Yeah, I'm still here. I got a call. They're doing... They're doing a thing on Inside Edition right now on why cops don't want you to videotape them.
Oh.
Somebody's giving me the lowdown right now. I apologize for that. We have a caller from...
Bill, we didn't see you at the show, dude.
Because I had to get my last treatment. And it worked out. It worked out where I couldn't go.
Okay. You saw the press on it, though, right?
826-7753. How's the weather over there?
California?
I'm sorry, guys. I was trying to get somebody their number. They weren't by a computer, but they were listening on the phone. But
every time there's odd silence, you just ask, how's the weather?
Yeah, I know. I'm
sorry. The uncomfortable silence.
Yeah.
But RJ, well, I'd like to ask you about that since Attica 7 is the only opening act that ever came out to do an encore there. Maybe you want to enlighten everybody on that one.
Yeah, well, we played at the Key Club with a band called Mushroom Head. You guys probably never heard of them. Pretty heavy band, but been around for a while.
All right.
Okay, and then Head PE. Yeah, they're actually pretty rad.
Oh, anyways, they played with Head?
Yeah, and Head PE.
Yeah.
We have the same digital distribution label, Suburban Noise. And anyways, we played our set. Crowd went pretty crazy. I think it's the craziest I've ever seen them. Just beating the shit out of each other in the pit. And we were done. Getting ready to walk off stage. Actually, Rusty was in the middle of packing his guitar back up in the bag, and the crowd just went crazy. They wouldn't stop. They wanted more. We got
wow.
the thumbs up, and we played another song. And when we were done, the owner of the Key Club met us backstage and said, "You guys are the only opening act ever in this Key Club history to get an encore. It's like no opening act ever get encore." So it's pretty cool.
That's pretty neat. And it's always a question of what do we play?
Huh.
Yeah.
Well,
that
no,
was
to get back with that, RJ, I went and got my last shot and it kind of knocked me out. The last one was a doozy. But what I'm talking about is I had a couple of tumors removed. So that's where I was going with that. But
scary.
I'll find out Monday about I should have a clean bill of health.
Awesome. Good for you.
That sounds good.
And we have that caller. Hello, Fran.
Yes, hon.
You said that Inside Edition was running something about why you can't phone the police. Would you like to elaborate and let everybody know?
Okay.
Right now we have Frank out of New York. We have RJ up out of L.A. We've got Tiger Lily she's in Texas right now, but from Las Vegas. And Pete out of Boston.
What it is that they're showing, this was in, I forget what state they just said, but a person was actually videotaping the cops that were doing something across the street. They came across, told the guy to stop videoing, and he didn't, and they beat the crap out of him. So they're trying to figure out, let's see, the officer was very enraged. So they actually arrested the guy for videoing and beat the crap out of him.
Oh.
That happened in Las Vegas on March 20th, where a guy was videotaping the cops, and it was horrendous. The cop came, kicked him in the nose, broke his nose, beat the crap out of him, and then you can even hear the guy is groaning because he's in so much pain, and the cop was imitating him, saying, oh, yeah, it hurts, doesn't it? Oh, that's how vile they are. They're satanic.
Well, they're showing quite a bit of police brutality.
They're out of control. They're out of control. And one interesting piece of information I found out just recently, because did you hear about the SWAT invasion in Tucson, Arizona? They invaded a two-time Marine Iraqi veteran who was in his home, and a SWAT team of five came in and busted down the door and unloaded 71 bullets into the house, and 20 of them hit the guy, and the bullets went out through the house and into the neighbor's house. I was actually there on Memorial Day to see that the place was frozen in time. All of this over the war on drugs. They found absolutely not a goddamn thing inside his house. They were looking for drugs and money. There was nothing in there. The wife was terrorized. The kid, and it was she and the four-year-old kid were hiding in the closet. And the media is getting the information from the cops saying that the district attorney's office, it's completely exonerated the SWAT team, saying that they did nothing wrong. Excuse me, that is a total. That's total overkill. Here, this guy goes overseas to fight for our country and to promote liberties abroad, comes home and gets attacked by the military police in his own home. That is a disgrace.
Which, by the way, he was holding an M16, but the safety was on. They tried to say that he fired back.
The
safety was on.
Right. It was an AR-15. They said that he they told the media, initial reports, the media said that he fired first. But then they checked out the information. They did an investigation, found out that the safety was still on. Now, this guy had worked a 12-hour shift. He had just gotten home a couple of hours prior to them invading the house. The wife and the 4-year-old kid was in the house. The 6-year-old kid was at school. It was about 10 o'clock in the morning. They busted down the door. The lady was terrorized. She's calling 911, and she's saying there's men with guns at the door. And the 911 says, well, can you identify them? I don't know. I don't know. And she says, oh, it says SWAT, you know. And she says, well, we're dispatching help. So the guy, the husband, she could hear the husband groaning for help as he's dying, and they did not, and they dispatched the paramedics. The paramedics were there in 2 minutes, and the SWAT motherfuckers did not let them in to check out this guy for over an hour. It was an hour and 15 minutes. That wife had to hear her husband die and was completely helpless to do anything about it. And now, in order to protect their agency, it was under Sheriff Dupnik's watch, the same asshole that was on TV talking about how it's the talk show host that caused that Jared crazy guy to open fire in Tucson. That same sheriff is the one who authorized this. And the reason they're authorizing this, and they're not going to tell you this, the reason they're authorizing this is because the sheriffs have to lobby the congressmen to get these SWAT teams, and if they don't use these SWAT teams, they're going to lose them. So he authorized this because there was some kind of a drug deal information, and there was some kind of a search warrant that they sealed from the public. I don't know if it's been shown to the public yet or anything, but this sheriff authorized this, and it went really sour, really bad. Do you know how many people they could have killed had there been people out there, innocent bystanders? This was total overkill, and it's happening around the country, and the media, it stays locally, and this should be a national story. This, what happened, if you saw the YouTubes, you've got the SWAT teams has their helmets with their helmet. They showed what they did. That was a total overkill and unwarranted. I mean, if the guys, he's a combat veteran, for God's sakes, and if they have all this intel that there's drugs going on, why the hell didn't they get him as he's coming home from work? Get him surround his car or something. These are some cowardly motherfuckers, and they did not go until they let a robot in there first, and it took them an hour and 15 minutes before they let any paramedic in there. By then, the guy was dead at least 20 minutes. It was disgusting. And I actually went there to the site on Memorial Day to actually see and to participate in the Memorial Day service, and there are people still saying, like Tucson Marine Corps League refused to give a color guard for that memorial service because they weren't sure if he really was a criminal or not. Well, excuse me, in this country, you are innocent until proven guilty. Number one, they found nothing in the house. Number two, he is dead and he will not have his day in court, so he died an innocent man. And now there are two kids that he left behind and the widow. And those kids now ask their mom, what did daddy do to deserve this? He did not a damn thing. I'm sickened by it.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt.
Go ahead, I'm done.
I'm going to interrupt. The person that's on the Inside Edition, his name is Steve Carding, K-A-R-D-I-A-N, former police officer. What he strongly suggests is that you do it from a distance. Obviously, don't interfere. However, if an officer tells you to stop videoing, he says you should stop videoing, or you could be arrested and charged. Technically, I think that we should, if for those of us who do use our phone for video or what have you, I think we should have on us code, and I'm sure someone I know could find us the code for this and get it out to us, so that we can carry the code with our phone or video device so that we can read it into the recording device, and then at that point we have a stronger power than just hearsay. Is that not
absolutely
correct?
Yes. And that's what happened to me recently on April 30th.
I got
some video.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead. I was videotaping some cops that were doing some dubious activities, and they told me to stop recording, and I did. So I did, and I was at a safe distance, and they came up to me. They handcuffed me for 56 minutes, and I threw them off their game, and they forgot that I still had my camera behind my back. So I turned that sucker back on, and I got about 47, 48 minutes worth of raw footage where I have such a great case. And one of the national attorneys contacted me, and he wants to represent me because he represents people for across the country for wrongful arrests. And the juicy stuff that I have recorded about how, you know, there was no reason they had to handcuff me for 56 minutes. All it was a show of force. And what I discovered later on is the reason they didn't want me to record is because what they were doing was a violation of their own policy. And that's what, like, there's no reason. If you're, you know how they tell us, if you have nothing to hide, why can't you let us search your car? Well, first of all, bullshit. That's our car, and I got a license to drive it. You need a warrant to search it. That's number one. And number two, the tables need to be turned. We need to say, if you assholes have nothing to hide, why should we stop recording? They work for us.
I got something for you guys. The police used your cell phone and your navigation data to spy on drivers. I want you guys to listen to this. Be aware of leaving your cell phone alarm while traveling long distances. Insurance and police agencies are tracking every movement while driving and talking. Even if just riding along with someone else will lessen the medical payout if in an accident. You're screwed if you speed from point A to point B and get involved in an accident. The insurance company will seek out info how fast you were speeding along. Turn off that damn silly phone if not needed, which is true.
But I like this lady's idea. I'm sorry, I didn't get your name.
Oh, me? I'm Fran.
Yeah.
We've met before on the phone.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
That's a great idea, and I've had others tell me that what you can also do is, and I'm getting some spyware myself, so I'll have my decoy camera where they tell me to turn it off. I'll turn it off. I don't necessarily have to go away, but I'll have my secret camera on me that's going directly onto the internet.
Okay.
Well,
now,
let me finish. Let me finish. In recent weeks, it was learned that Apple and Google are spying on people carrying the company's smartphones. No big surprise there, but two other paranoia-inducing tracking revelations that come out in the last week are perhaps more alarming for motorists. The state police in Michigan have been collecting data from drivers' cell phones during routine traffic stops. They got a little gizmo they plug in and download your phone. They've used data from TomTom navigation system to catch the speeders and also determine the best place to install speed cameras. It's enough to turn even the most tech-loving driver into a Luddite. If you're stopped by a cop in the state of Michigan, you could be asked to hand over your mobile phone along with license and registration and using a cell phone extraction device from a company called Cellebrite. The law could find out a lot more about you than you ever imagined.
Yeah, why live in this country anymore when you have so much police at you? I mean, we have more people jailed today than in the history of the world. Here in this country, due to the war on drugs, for marijuana. I mean, I've never known. I was a registered nurse. I've never known anybody to OD off of marijuana, for heaven's sakes. And we have more. I think the CBS Nightly News reported that the number of jailed people for the war on drugs has escalated to 1,400% in the last 20 years. So we have more people in jail today than any time in the history of the world, and that includes Nazi Germany and the Russian, the when and and um, you know, all of these totalitarian governments. Who says the United States is the land of the home and the and land of the brave and the home of the free?
Well, that was a myth.
I'm not too happy with our state of affairs, and this is what motivates me to get in the grill of these asshole. You know, people say, oh, it's not the police, it's the policies. Well, you know what? That's bullshit. It is the police. They swore an oath to uphold the Constitution, and they violate that Constitution every way they at every turn. It's disgusting.
I'm going to throw something in, and that's only because when I was in New York, and this goes back 30-some years ago, it goes state by state of what you can and can't do as far as recording goes. And it would be in one's best interest to make sure that you have or you know what is legal in your state. Because if you were to record and you were the only person that was there or in that vicinity, then you could be prosecuted in that state. So it'd be really important to know what the legalities are. And if you were to record it, I would definitely make sure that it didn't come out in your name. You would find somebody. In other words, you don't use your home computer or any of that. You could use a public computer, I guess, like the library,
mm-hmm.
and upload it. But you would have to make sure that the data, that's the metadata that is there does not come back to you. So, in other words, if it were a phone, the metadata, like in my pictures, there's metadata. It says, it's me, it's my camera, it has all of those numbers. It could technically be traced back to me as the
right.
one who did the photography,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it would be really important because, like, in New York, if it was a phone conversation, I had to inform the other person that the phone call was being recorded. So, and now, touching on that subject, anything that is done via email or texting can be used in the court of law. So that's something
yeah.
else to keep
yeah,
in mind.
Right.
It's
email
crucial
too.
To know your laws.
It's pretty, it's like this. Anything you don't want anybody to know, it's better off to tell in person. Because three people can keep a secret if two are dead.
Phil. Well,
I make sure that the other party's dead. I mean, that's easy.
But right now, guys, we had the minute left, and we're still recording, but we're not streaming. So what I'd like to do is I extend everybody to come back Thursday, and we'll pick up where we left off.
I'll be flying,
thanks,
honey.
Phil.
I'm flying to New York.
Thanks for having me to co-host tonight there,
fun.
Bud.
Nice
hey,
meeting
no
you,
worries,
Frank.
I'll give you a ring up in the morning, okay? How's your schedule?
Mine?
Yeah, tomorrow during the day is cool, yeah. I got a gig starting at, I'm leaving around 5, so anytime before then.
All right, thanks, Frank.
That's Eastern time from where you are.
I got it. Tiger Lily, thank you, and congratulations on the grandbaby.
Thanks. I should be home in a week, so hopefully I'll have computer access and we'll get on the ball and get my stuff together.
What I'll do is I'll send Frank's information to you, and you guys can kibitz from there. And Fran, as always, you're a welcome inspiration.
Inspiration? I don't do nothing. I just sit and ride my bike, and I don't do nothing. I'll talk to everybody later.
Take
okay,
care.
Good night,
guys.
Bye,
later,
guys.
Thanks.
Bye.